Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is episode 28 of Insider Interviews. I have an old friend back in the guest spot, the founder and CEO of Sustainable Brands Worldwide, Coann Scriziniers. Now, since this is a podcast about media and marketing, you probably want to know what's in it for you if we talk about sustainability. And the answer is maybe a big percent of your consumer base. And that's because consumers have raised the bar higher than ever on companies that they'll do business with. That means there's more focus on the proverbial triple bottom line of people, planet, and profit, from diversity and inclusion to environmental impact. Coann and her team lead a global conversation with some of the biggest brands, from Pepsi to Mattel, L'Oreal to 3M, Campbell's, on how to deliver business value through innovation for environmental and social purpose. Some recent examples, executives at Nike and Chipotle are now going to be compensated on a new set of environmental and social goals. MasterCard is launching a credit card that rewards cardholders for shopping at women-owned businesses. And Visa's data center in Virginia is going to be powered by 100% renewable energy within the next 5 years. So all of these companies are thinking about how to not only develop, but communicate their social purpose and show exactly how they're navigating not only the turbulent times today, but a sustainable future. Here's Coann. Hey, Coann.
It's so nice to reconnect, E.B., always.
So nice to see you. And while this is audio, I get to see into your new living room. Is that what I'm looking at? It's so sunny and beautiful. You just moved in?
Following the post-COVID trend, moving out of the urban setting and out to the rural Pacific Northwest, out on the Pacific Ocean. It's a lovely transition, and we'll see how it feels after COVID disappears. And we've been here for a substantial amount of time. But
yeah, well, mazel tov.
Thanks.
All right. Well, you and I know each other, but I wanted to kind of reintroduce you, especially to the folks who are going to read this as an article in the Continuum, and because it'll publish during Earth Month. Give me a little backstory about what Sustainable Brands began as and how its mission changed more than probably 15 years later, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was 2002 April when I actually had the chance to hear Bill McDonough at a NASA event speak, that many years of sort of systemic exposure to the role of business in impacting society and our environment kind of sparked for me. And I started to become interested in catalyzing brands as an engine for innovation and a means of getting to the future we want. So I would say the mission has not changed one iota. Definitely tactics have changed because the market has changed, thankfully, and that's exciting for all of us.
What kind of changes have you seen in the marketplace?
Well, the key insight for me was that market drivers were going to be such that those companies that understood how to innovate for environmental and social benefit were going to be the companies that survived and thrived in the 21st century. But of course, almost 20 years ago, that was not something that was recognized. And so when we began, it really was about aggregating those parts of the company that really understood the market drivers or the environmental and social drivers, usually sitting in environmental health and safety offices or corporate social responsibility offices, and trying to help them understand that they had the potential to be a more strategic asset to the company by connecting what it is they know to the core brand value of the business, right? And that really has taken almost two decades to both enable that stakeholder group that we originally brought together, equip them to understand how to talk marketing and innovation, and to then attract marketers and innovators to the conversation, because it's really key that the three legs to the stool work in concert with each other in order for there to be effective business value created as well as impact at the same time.
Well, you've teed me up for so many things to ask. So I want to come back to what the three legs of the stool are. But you also used a phrase that you educated me back in 2018. I shouldn't be using. Corporate social responsibility is too much of a responsibility. So how do you describe what we used to call CSR? What phrases do you use?
Well, I just talk about it as an engine for growth. And I think the ANA is picked up on this moniker. The notion of good growth is really where it's at today. And that's the reality. The market conditions are such that more and more stakeholders are starting to really understand the problems that we face and starting to really both expect brands to do something different, but also reward them for doing something different. And so for me, it's about that engine of growth and future-proofing a brand for century.
It's more of the carrot than the stick.
Yeah. And certainly, this is the role that we play in the ecosystem. There's always a value in the stick, helping nudge, people along or making sure that they stay within the proper authentic guardrails. But at the end of the day, if we don't catalyze a shift in our economic engine, we're not going to sustain the work that we need to do. So what we're really interested in is driving market shift and economic system shift so that it becomes a virtuous circle and we all get to create the economy that supports us all for the long term.
Well, I want to encourage everyone to not only visit sustainablebrands.com, but also to become a member company. But in the meantime, to use the carrot, let's entice them with a little bit of tangible information. So tell me more about those three legs of the stool.
Actually, we'd almost say there are five, but we think constituency that it needs to be in lockstep. The sustainability folks who understand the real challenges that we face societally and as a planet, that's one stakeholder group. Sometimes they still sit in separate groups. There still are the social responsibility, corporate responsibility teams. And far too often still we find the sustainability teams only tackling environmental issues. We see them as intrinsically connected. But that's one leg. Brand marketers and brand strategists who own the market and the customer and the product and service positioning and how that product and service is built out. And then the innovation teams who are really there to help look at new ways to enable better brands through materials innovation, packaging innovation, and even business model innovation in some situations.
So is that where like supply chain and things like that would come in on the innovation bucket?
Definitely. And where that sits is evolving at most companies that we work. Again, oftentimes the sustainability teams have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting and sort of pointing people in the right direction. And that work is starting to slide into other parts of the house, which is great. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about transitioning whole businesses, really, transitioning the way that we do things as a company and transforming at the same time through brand messaging and communications what our culture aspires to and how we as consumers think about what the good life looks like and how we want to engage with the brands we engage with and which brands we want to engage with.
So there you go, teeing me up again. We've seen a lot of waves of passion, especially in this past year, with the impact of not just an inconvenient truth, but an inconvenient pandemic.
Yes.
So I know that we're facing sort of two aspects of, let's call it, wokeness. I don't know, but we have a younger generation that's much more sensitized and much more activated to impact change. And then we also have this kind of latest reckoning of giant climate change and pandemic. And all of that is wrapped around an inclusive focus. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the perfect storm, if you will, to raise awareness and raise the activity level. So what I'd love for you to just go on about is what's happening with consumer demand and brands and brand purpose.
Yeah. Discuss. Well, here's what I would say. A couple things. One is that the pandemic and all of the elevated acknowledgement of social injustice that's come through some of the Black Lives Matter incidents that we've faced and had to address in the last year, as you say, are creating a perfect storm. And people are starting to connect all of these things as one. So there's more of an understanding about the connection between environmental challenges and social challenges. And that's a great thing. It is increasing engagement across the board. I know that sometimes people ask me, you know, is this just a flash in the pan? Is this another trend? How does it compare to the green rush of the 2007 timeframe or what have you? Having been at this for quite some time, I will say that the level of interest and engagement in any given topic is naturally somewhat connected to news cycles and what's in your face every day, and that's normal. However, at the same time, we are starting to build these mental models internally that we're starting to connect to as individual consumers. And the business response to that over time, by and large, companies are seeing these moments in time as an opportunity for coming to grips with risk in some ways and looking for opportunities to innovate. So what we saw in 2007, when there was original green rush that came about partly as a result of Inconvenient Truth and partly as a result of the business engagement in Hurricane Katrina, where there was a lot of active brand activation in support of that, people did get ahead of their skis. Brands got ahead of their skis in talking about their commitment to being green. However, when they took the backlash from around claims of greenwash, they maybe stopped talking, but by and large, they actually kept at the work. And so today, when we have a new crisis at the table, I will say that the companies that we have worked with since early 2006 are way more sophisticated in their own internal operations, in their understanding of the landscape, their understanding of systems. And so they're able to take these moments and accelerate work that they're doing built on the work that they've been doing for the last decade. So there definitely is going to be forward progress. No question. We have all kinds of data around that.
That's so heartening.
Yeah.
So best intentions and responding to consumer demand aside, we all, especially in the marketing industry, want to understand if there's a bona fide ROI against supporting initiatives and being pro-social and, as Rashad Tabakawala calls it, having a soul, a brand soul.
Yeah.
So what kind of proof is in the pudding?
I mean, there's so much data in support of sales driven by environmental and social value propositions. You see all kinds of smart brand transformation happening at many different companies who have portfolios of brands who are handling it in different ways, whether they're redesigning existing brands to be more environmentally or socially positive, whether they're buying direct-to-consumer brands to improve their portfolio, or whether they're repositioning brands to have a better statement about an existing value proposition that they haven't really leveraged. There are many ways that companies are starting to drive more value and more sales out of this positioning.
I guess P&G kind of led the march in a lot of ways. I know that you built out, in conjunction with Mark Pritchard as one of your allies, the five levels of progress. Are you still using that kind of chart or the brand transformation roadmap?
Yeah, P&G is a great example of a company that has now seen the opportunity and is using the demonstrated sales performance to justify more innovation. But the reference I made to build, buy, or reposition really came from a Clorox mental model back in early 2008, where they had Brita water filter, you know, was a reposition product that started to speak to the plastics problem. They had Burt's Bees, which they acquired, and Greenworks, which they launched, largest invested launch in their history at that time. I was actually just speaking to Mark this morning and telling him that I was out at Target, one of our other partners and favorite retailers, and saw the launch of their Planet Kind brand that, if you haven't seen it, it's absolutely a beautiful example of a new innovation from Gillette that is gorgeous packaging, got a great environmental value proposition message attached to it. And they bought Native brand deodorant, which is another product I love and use, which is an acquired product. And you put that alongside Tide cold water and other brands, their herbal essence innovation that's focusing on biodiversity. And you just start to see the same kind of a multi-tiered approach to a transformation of a whole family of brands. Super exciting.
I love that. And boy, those are great examples right there.
Mm-hmm.
Two quick questions. We've all had to do the proverbial pandemic pivot, but I love sustainable brands as a conference. And certainly that was a huge impact for you to have to go virtual. What have been some of the pros and cons and maybe advice that you would give others who are so event-driven as an offshoot of their product?
Well, you're right. It was a heavy hit last year for us on many levels. I mean, we are not fundamentally an event company, but we do generate quite a bit of revenue from events. And we certainly catalyze community through face-to-face events. So it was hard to lose that channel. The upside of the virtual experience is that we were actually able to reach many more people last year and engage many more people last year. So we have had a lot of success with our virtual events, and our NPS scores have been super strong. And I think that the net result will be we'll have a larger pipeline to pull people into our work as a result of that. So that's great. We have juggled, like many people, our calendar such that we've bumped back our U.S. flagship event to this fall. We're hoping that vaccines will be such that we'll be able to be back to a full house in the fall, and that's great. We just ran our first hybrid event in the world in Yokohama, which was the last face-to-face event we ran last year. It was February of last year in Yokohama, as the quarantine cruise ship was sitting offshore out the window of our event. So it was nice to get back a year later to convening people face-to-face and to recognize that you can do both and. We actually co-hosted a whole Asian region event, which included support from our teams in Korea and in Malaysia and in Thailand, as well as the Japanese team. So it was really an opportunity to bring more people from across the region into the conversation and help share innovation that's going on more broadly than we were able to do with only a face-to-face event.
Well, I'll say it again, mazel tov.
Thanks so much. You got to keep dancing. I keep telling my team, resilience in a VUCA world, if that term is familiar to you, is a practice.
Tell us again.
A VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world, which is something that will be the case for some amount longer, certainly not just a year, but for in the coming years as we transition into new economic models that we can use to sustain ourselves on this planet going forward. It helps to be able to be flexible and to pivot when change happens and disruption happens. And there will be more of it, necessarily so.
Last question, Coanne. When we spoke a few years back, I asked you this question, and now I'll reframe it. Are you more hopeful in our current political environment for sustainable change?
Do you mean as a function of who's in the office of president at the moment, or do you mean...
I'll leave that up to your interpretation.
I will say I continue to be troubled by the polarity in the world today, and I think that whoever is in charge has got to build a stronger muscle around learning to listen and learning to empathize and learning to hear people who, by and large, are saying more of the same thing than not, but we have just developed a habit of using people's words against them instead of probing underneath the words to understand what's really meant and what's shared. And so while I personally am happy that there has been a shift in leadership at the moment, I still think we have a lot of work to do on both sides and individually in our communities. Even in our families, it's certainly been an interesting truth for me in this last 4 years.
Yes. So. That was a beautiful both reality check and clear recommendation for all of us to be more empathetic listeners and better communicators. Coanne Skrzyniers, thank you so much.
Always a delight to talk with you, and hope to see you again soon, maybe this fall. We'll get there.
I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and let me know if you have a question or suggestion for our next guest. My theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable and Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. And thanks again for listening.